Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. That first formal dance can jangle the nerves of the most poised American teenager. Add to the equation the obstacles of autism and the rite of passage can seem daunting. A new documentary now airing on HBO, How to Dance in Ohio, tells the story of one group of Central Ohio young adults living with autism as they prepare for their first formal. Here's one of the stars of the film describing her struggle.
When I have to perform and I'm not prepared for it, I tend to get really panicky and anxious. I think I'm such an idiot. I should have known that.
Joining us is the psychologist who conceived the formal dance as therapy for a group of his patients at Amigo Family Counseling, Dr. Emilio Amigo. Welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you. Glad to be here.
And joining us by phone is a producer and director of How to Dance in Ohio, Alexandra Shiva. Welcome to the show, Alexandra.
Thank you so much for having me.
The title of the film has a double entendre, of course, for me at least. There's the formal dance event that everyone's preparing for, and then there is sort of the dance of life. And Dr. Amigo, this was about much more than fancy dresses, learning some dance moves and buying corsages, right?
Right, exactly. I think life and dance kind of follow the same pattern where my movement, my rhythm, my life kind of gets mixed with yours. And it's about coordination. It's about being in rhythm and sync and so forth. And it's scary and it's complicated. And yet it can be beautiful process. So I grew up dancing as a Cuban native, you know, and that was always a part of relating to others and expressing yourself. So I kind of brought that into my caseload and my practice where dancing and life kind of mirrors each other.
And how did you, your clients in this particular age group, they're beyond the high school thing. Mm-hmm. What sort of levels of knowledge did they have about the whole formal dance idea?
Really, it was very limited. Those that were still in high school, this might have been, you know, their very first opportunity. But we had a number of people, young adults and middle-aged adults, that for them, this was their first attempt at it. So they might have had the opportunities when they were in high school, but they weren't ready. They weren't interested. They would have been terrified. And frankly, in some cases, they wouldn't have been accepted or invited to really be a part of that experience.
Alexandra, tell us how you made the connection with Amigo Counseling and where this came from for you as a documentary filmmaker.
I was trying to find the perfect way to tell a coming-of-age story of people on the spectrum. And it was something that, I had done a lot of research in New York where I live, and then I ended up hearing about Dr. Amigo and his practice and coming through someone at a conference. And I went to Columbus to meet with him, and he was putting on a play. And I met a number of people who were in the documentary who were doing that play and met Dr. Amigo, and he talked about this prom that he was doing in April and how he was going to spend 3 months preparing for it and, you know, what they were going to do. And I thought that was the most relatable way to tell that story, because we all know what it's like to be nervous about going to your first dance and having your first date and talking to someone for the first time. And so to be able to put it in a context that everyone understood seemed like a great way to make it relatable to everyone.
We're talking about the rite of passage known as the formal dance as it pertains to a group of Central Ohio young people who attended one in 2013. My guests, Alexandra Shiva, she's the producer and director of How to Dance in Ohio. That's the name of a documentary she produced. It's now airing on HBO. And also with us in the studio, Dr. Emilio Amigo. He's a psychologist who conceived the formal dance as therapy for a group of his patients at Amigo Family Counseling. If you have a question or comment, you're welcome to join the conversation. Give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. How do you know when you hit the right prospect, Alexandra? How do you know when it's the right situation?
You know, it's funny because it's I could tell from talking to Dr. Amigo and from meeting some of the clients that it's a very important process when you're telling a story to find people who can tell that story so that you're not actually talking at people. You're actually, I think it's more interesting when you're just showing them a story and you're getting to know people. And so it's really about the people, and it's about, finding people who are engaged. And I think that knowing that there was going to be this dance at the end made that, it just made the process easier, because then there's a beginning, middle, and end. It sort of gives a structure to the story. And I thought what the work that he was doing was incredible, and I loved meeting the clients. And a lot of those clients are actually in the movie and ended up at the dance.
Right.
And, you know, we went through a whole process together talking about, you know, how to make sure we didn't impact treatment negatively and what were we doing. I mean, you know, you can speak to this too, Dr. Amigo, but we really went through a whole process together about what, you know, you were like, who are these people from New York?
Right. Exactly. Why are you here?
Well, how did you incorporate that into the process, Dr. Amigo?
Well, it was done carefully and with a lot of thought, a lot of prayer. I could put that in there. Frankly, what some of the steps were, one, I consulted with some people who knew of Alexandra's work and heard nothing but rave reviews about her passion, her commitment, her honesty, her work ethic. So I checked her out that way. And then in talking with her and Barry Perlman, the producer, and so forth, we got to understand that they had a mission, and their mission and our mission really lined up. You know, that they want to be a voice for those who have no voice. And when you work with, you specialize with people on the autism spectrum, you do that every day. You know, I'm not only giving them a voice, but I'm helping them find their voice and letting it be heard, and then facilitating relationship and community and so forth. So we did that. So we had, for example, a town hall meeting where we invited all the clients who would possibly participate, and parents and caregivers, and then Alexandra and her whole team came out, and we had questions and answers, and they explained to us why they were here and what their goals were. And that was a big step. And then another thing we did, we had a whole week where they were in our therapy group sessions, but there was no filming. Mm-hmm. There was no audio taping, whatever. And everyone got to touch the camera, look at the camera, look at the recording instruments and so forth, and got familiar and comfortable.
What were their concerns, your clients? Your direct, not necessarily their parents, but.
Right. I would say some of the immediate reactions were, oh my gosh, how's my life going to change once I become a movie star?
Uh-huh.
I mean, we had that. Like, oh my gosh, I don't even have an agent. Do I have time to take acting lessons? And I had to tell them, it's a documentary. You're not going to be acting. You're just going to be being, you know. So that took a while. For others, it was awesome. It was, wow, I can make a difference. I can help others out there like me know that they're not alone. And we also agreed fundamentally that this experience had to be therapeutic in its own right for us as clients, right? And as a therapeutic team. So we realized that every day of our lives, people record us. Every day of our lives, people videotape. They visually remember our behaviors, our actions, our words. And for many people with autism, they didn't understand that. They just think they live moment by moment. It's like, mm-hmm. Wait a minute, you know what you did yesterday? Affects your relationship with that person today, or they're going to have a hard time forgetting what you did or didn't do and so forth. And so it made us be very aware that we are amongst people, and we need to realize that people record us and we record them. So that was neat.
What were some of the concerns from parents and or guardians, Alexandra, Shiva, that you had to address?
You know, why are you doing this? You know, what are you going to do with this material? What's the bigger purpose? And then on a more micro level, you know, there was, you know, one of the girls that we filmed, you know, before we came to her house, she and her mother would, you know, ask for an itinerary. I mean, this was really her asking, and then her mother asking me for it, which was, you know, where we were going to be in her house at every minute. So, you know, from 2 to 2:15 we enter, from 2:15 to 2:30 we put our gear away. And I think that those kinds of sort of, how is this going to be, is it going to be intrusive, and how is that going to happen, and is it worth it? I mean, I think that, you know, what Dr. Amigo was talking about in terms of having a voice, I think that ultimately the goal was, you know, I want my kids to feel like they have a voice, and I think that the young people who participated wanted to have a voice, and they wanted to be heard, and so it was like, I think, how are we going to all get to that goal?
Well, so Dr. Amigo, how did they do? I mean, when you look back and you've seen the film and you look back at these people you work with all the time, did they come across authentically? Did it feel authentic to you? And that's like how they really are?
Absolutely. Absolutely. That's my favorite element, I think, of the film is how honest it is, how authentic. And I tell people, you know, for good or bad, what you see on the screen, that's me, that's our program, and that's our clients. You love it or leave it, you know?
Yeah, Alexandra, I mean, I suppose this is something you always worry about. Any journalist does that, you know, you want to be the fly on the wall, but of course we know that we're really not.
Right.
But we can change the situation.
You know, someone asked me recently in a Q&A, you know, do you think that, how do you think the camera affected what you got on camera? And I said, well, there's no way that you can ever say that it doesn't affect, you know, that it doesn't have an effect on people. But I do think that in this situation, there was just a high degree of, I don't know, and Dr. Meagher, you can speak to this. There's a part of me that thinks that there just isn't that, for the clients especially, there wasn't that sense of a camera adds a million viewers or a camera adds 100,000 views. It was just like a camera is another person.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think that's correct?
I would even take that even a step further, Alexandra, is that for a lot of my clients, after the first week, it really didn't matter. Because
right.
One of the things we work on is being aware of your fellow group members, let alone a camera.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Let alone the director who's hiding behind that chair or behind that cabinet
under your desk.
Like they weren't processing that because they struggled to process the person next to them.
Uh-huh.
Right.
So,
and I think that reads on camera.
It's ironic, right?
It mm-hmm. does read on camera. I mean, it is kind of – that's why I asked because it seemed so normal – all things being equal, and I wondered how that worked, but you hid under desks.
Right. We had a running joke. The joke was, who was going to be my client after the process was over to say in session, Dr. Meagher, when are we going to start filming? You know, because that's how unaware some of them are. So fortunately, they were all aware that we had filmed. So yay, reality testing.
Later on in the program, we're going to have one of your clients with her mother, I think, is going to come in and join us and talk about what their responses were. We'll continue our conversation about the film, How to Dance in Ohio. It's on HBO right now. We'll have a link with more information on our website at WOSU.org/allsides. We'd like to hear from people who have seen the film, what your reactions were to it, and just the whole idea of doing this. 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@WOSU.org. You can also check out our Facebook page and post your question or comment there. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. A new documentary on HBO entitled How to Dance in Ohio follows the lives of three young women on the autism spectrum as they prepare for their first formal dance. The film focuses on a social skills therapy group. In one scene, Jessica Sullivan struggles to understand her workplace.
You really have to watch your attitude because you act like you're superior to others. And it's very disrespectful. And they told me that yesterday you were the same way. And the tone that you
did
it.
I feel like there are times where we don't completely understand each other. That's all I was trying to say. I wasn't trying to be mean.
Well, first of all, I really don't necessarily have to understand you because you're an employee and your function here is to work.
But if you don't understand me, how can I work?
Still with us is Columbus-based psychologist for Amigo Family Counseling, Dr. Emilio Amigo, and by phone, director and producer of the new documentary, How to Dance in Ohio, Alexandra Shiva. Alexandra, why was it important to show those kinds of scenes in this film?
You know, I think that scene is particularly important because I think that it's, you know, trying to simulate the real world in some way. I do think that, you know, you're not always going to be understood at work, and it's not... it's part of the process. It's part of why it's difficult for people with, you know, on the autism spectrum to hold jobs. So that's one part. The other part is, you know, we've been showing Jessica and how she was learning how to advocate for herself. And, you know, in that scene, that's a big part of what she does. She actually advocates for herself and really, you know, tries to explain where she's coming from and take care of herself in an interesting way. And I think that the scene is both really important for you to understand Jessica, but it's also really important to understand what's out there for, you know, people on the spectrum. This is a job training program, and, you know, they do wonderful work, and, you know, and yet you're not always going to be understood no matter what you're doing in the workplace. So,
yeah. Dr. Amigo, for you as a therapist, how did that fit into the paradigm for you?
I think it was very powerful. For Jess, I think the scene portrayed her weakness and her strength all at the same time. I mean, as her therapist, I was so proud of her ability to advocate, to express her thoughts, her emotions when she was going through this hurricane, you know, being criticized or being called on the carpet, so to speak. And at the same time, too, I think anyone who cares for, works with, or loves someone with autism, you know, you can get irritated, you can get frustrated, you can just say, okay, look, just do it. Just put the dishes in the dishwasher, or just get in the car, or just do your homework. And sometimes we're not feely, you know, touchy-feely kind of people. We're just, let's just get to what we need to do. So I think that was a good reminder of how that reality takes place.
And that their lives, you know, it's all about this formal and getting ready for this fun, supposedly fun night, but
right.
They have their lives too. It really, for me, it, not that I didn't think of her as a human before, but it really gave some layer to her personality for me. I felt like this is like a more fully a human being, not just someone getting ready right. to pick out a prom dress.
And all of those experiences are hard for all of us.
Yeah.
But I think, like you said, you saw even some extra levels of difficulty and issues for people living with autism.
Alexandra, how did you wind up focusing on the few students that you did? I mean, there were a lot of people in the film, but as far as following them in their everyday lives.
Well, I'm smiling just because it was such an interesting process. And I, you know, there were actually different sort of levels of participation that people wanted to engage in. So there were people who didn't want to be in the film at all. There were people who were happy to be filmed in group. There were people who were comfortable being interviewed. And then there were people who said, you know, to Dr. Amigo that they were willing to even have us come home with them. So that was, and be in their daily lives. So that was already sort of, there was already a breakdown in terms of who was comfortable with what. And then, you know, we actually did follow 4 women and 4 men. And we ended up sort of toward the end realizing, I mean, before we even got into the editing room, realizing that the strength of the story really was with these 3 young women coming of age. You know, Meredith is 16 in the movie and in high school, and Caroline is, you know, in her first year of college and 19, and Jessica is trying to be in the workplace. And there was something about the girls especially, too, that, you know, somehow a prom and girls and it seemed to go very, very well together. And, you know, it's very important when you're telling a story that it also be a story, because it doesn't really work if it's just you being fed information.
Mm-hmm.
And it was the strength, really, of those 3 in particular. And I couldn't quite let go of showing, you know, more of the boys until we figured out in the edit room how to have those, what we call the interstitials, where, you know, different people who wanted to be interviewed speak about their interests and about their struggles. So once I felt like we had a way to bring in more people who had wanted to participate, I felt like we could go toward the story instead of away from it. You know, there was a moment where my husband said to me, wait, if you're really being pulled in this direction, why would you want to go the other way, the other direction? Like, there was a lot of strength in those 3 stories.
Huh.
And so that was where we went. And there's also very little focus on girls with autism, which, you know, I think was something that was very interesting to me as well.
Because the incidence is lower among girls, Dr. Amigo, is that why that is, or what?
Right. It's both. It's the incidence is lower, but also I think the recognition and the identification is lower.
Huh.
Because it frankly presents differently. And so they can kind of be more invisible. They can kind of go through adolescence, early adulthood, And yeah, I have struggles and issues, but not necessarily be obviously, you know, living with autism as males tend to be more readily identified.
And there was an article I read about this, Alexandra Shiva and Dr. Amigo, that said something about how girls tend to not be taught as readily how to defend themselves and how to stick up for themselves. Point taken with Jessica Sullivan. Why is that? Is that just a social? Is that a social thing in our society?
I think more
anyway.
More so, right? Yeah. Right. We're taught to. I think Caroline's mother pointed that out well in the documentary that we teach our girls to be nice and polite. Mm-hmm. And follow manners, social etiquette, and so forth. And perhaps young men have more leeway to kind of be barbaric or primitive, you know? Mm-hmm. And so, and I think, too, just the early flow of early school experience, a lot of girls really enjoy communicating and talking and expressing feelings. And though boys perhaps can do it just as well, sometimes they're more behaviorally connecting with their peers and so forth. And that's a generalization. It's not true for everybody. Mm-hmm. But in our society, sociologically speaking, women, young girls have tended to use communication and relationship as part of their social development more so than maybe boys early on.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking about the film How to Dance in Ohio. It's on HBO right now. You can learn more about it. Check out the link on our website at WOSU.org. The documentary is about a group of young Central Ohioans who live with autism. They're along the spectrum, and their families, and how they get ready for a big formal that is put together by the Amigo Family Counseling. My guest here with me, Dr. Emilio Amigo, he's the psychologist who conceived the formal dance, and also the filmmaker, producer, and director of How to Dance in Ohio, Alexandra Shiva. Questions or comments, give us a call. If you saw the film, want to talk about it, give us a call, 614-292-8513. And John in Lancaster, you're on the air. Hi, John.
Good morning. Just wanted to say that I watched the film last week on HBO. I was intrigued by the title, but within the first few minutes of the wonderful documentary, that it was evident that there was something special. And you mentioned it, Anne, that the film was not only about learning to dance, but growing up and coming of age. And it was just a wonderful documentary from the very get-go. And I think that the producers and director should, I don't know if this is their first, but it's going to create a lot of talk about how well they did. I hope it does well in the awards. I'm sure it'll win quite a few. The big thing is, as I was watching it, I kept thinking to myself, not only were these wonderfully beautiful young men and women here in Columbus growing up in Central Ohio, but Dr. Amigo, they're just so fortunate to have such a program that their parents can afford and go to. It was a wonderful documentary and I enjoyed watching.
Thank you, John.
Thank you, John.
Thank
I appreciate
you so
your
much.
Kind words. Thanks.
It has shown, was it at Sundance, Alexandra?
Yes, the movie premiered at Sundance in January, and now is on HBO.
Yeah. Well, that's not bad.
It's not bad.
Actually, HBO picked it up even before Sundance, right?
Yeah, they picked it up 3 weeks before Sundance.
Can I throw something in here, Alexandra? Do you remember when we were talking with our clients about this endeavor, you know, this project?
Yep.
There was one young man who I think he was trying to comfort his nerves as well as those of his fellow group members. He said, "Hey, everybody, keep something in mind here. We're talking documentary. Documentary. There's probably going to be only like 13 people ever see it or hear about it." And so you know, a couple years later, it's more like maybe 13 million people have heard about it. So that's who knew, right? Who knew?
Yeah. Yeah. And more and more and more because it's such a tight-knit community in its way in terms of communicating these kinds of events. Once again, 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org if you'd like to join the conversation. How did you... Was it difficult, Alexandra, to get the parents to open up and welcome you into their homes and into something that they've been grappling with for many, many years and with some varying levels of success?
You know, it wasn't after the initial, I mean, after that town hall meeting that Dr. Amigo set up and after that first week, and I really think that because, you know, because of their trust in him and because of their trust in the program, you know, they understood that he had vetted us and what we were doing and why. And mm-hmm. so it really wasn't. And I think that they were, you know, really wanting to be heard. And this is something that there is an invisibility factor, I think, for what their daily lives look like and what their experience is. And I think that, you know, they were really... they were welcoming the opportunity to talk about it and to open up about it, and it was quite extraordinary and courageous. And I know that, I mean, Dr. Amigo, when I showed it to you for the first time, we talked about this, and you were like, "That's such an interesting perspective because you usually see them in the office. You don't see."
Right.
Right.
Well, I wonder, Dr. Amigo, if you counsel parents as well.
Yeah, we do.
And caretakers, or
we do, absolutely. And even with all my years of experience, that footage of their very honest and forthright admission of the struggles, the pain, the joy was very moving for me.
I think, well, I had so many favorite. I mean, I could sit and, you know, dice the film up, dice it and slice it and talk about every little cut, you know, from it. But one of my favorites was, I can't think of, remember her name right now, but she, the dark haired girl, and I think the high schooler.
Meredith.
And she's having dinner with her family, and then she just gets up and walks out.
Right.
And her dad goes, "Oh, there's our 2 minutes." I mean, just things like that, moments like that were sort of wonderful and funny and cool.
Well, I mean, I'm so glad that you thought so. And I think that part of what we really tried to do was, you know, not as the camera, not take up too much space and, mm-hmm. and really just allow the viewer to be in their experience. So that was the goal all along in the edit room. How do we edit this so that, you know, you are in their experience, that you're not looking at people, you're with them. You're with them at home, you're with them at Dr. Amigo's, you're with them at the dance, you're walking into that dance with them, with all their fears and all their nerves and all of the excitement, and you're relating. So... Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there was so much to the film, and then it got to a point where I'm like, "Oh, and there's still the dance, you know? We still get to go to the dance." It was pretty exciting. Darla in Columbus, you're on the air. Hi, Darla.
Hi. I'm calling in because I watched the documentary actually just yesterday, and I was fascinated in that in a past work life, I worked as a technical writing instructor at Ohio State, and one of my students had autism. He was someone who was in the honors program. He was a very brilliant young man. But I was struck with the commonality of experiences with folks with this diagnosis. For instance, he was a very literal person. And so in my syllabus, I said, you know, you could contact me anytime with questions about the homework. And my phone rang at during the night and woke me, in fact. And... So I answered the phone, and he identified himself, and he said he was calling with a question about the homework. I asked him what time it was, and he said, "Yeah, it's according to my GE digital alarm clock, it's 1:42, but it could be wrong." And so I let him know that it wasn't wrong and explained that he could come the next morning. I would be available from 9 to 11. So when I arrived at work, he was sleeping on the floor outside my office because he wanted to be there first. While this may seem unusual to somebody who hasn't worked with people with autism, it became something that was very common to me. Mm-hmm. You know, we worked as teams. The students worked on projects as teams. And he would go to the designated site at 8 a.m. as scheduled, and if someone wasn't there, he would leave. And the same went for the conversation cues. You know, I worked with him sort of on the side to coach him a little bit, and he was very concerned about how he was perceived socially. He was concerned about having conversation and how to have a casual conversation. And when I heard the young man who asked, you know, how, what do I say to start a conversation? It took me right back to that time. And I found the whole documentary actually very touching and a very genuine portrayal of what life is like for someone with autism. Hmm.
Thank you, Darla.
Thanks, Darla.
Thank you so much.
The literal thing is something you're used to. You're just nodding, Dr. Amigo.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
every
and
day.
I thought Darla
every
explained
day,
it really, really well.
Right. They've taught me how to communicate much better. Right. Who cares if I have a doctorate? It don't matter.
Yeah,
absolutely. One thing I'd like to throw in here, too, is related to this. This film is powerful for so many reasons.
Yeah.
Yes, I think it's an unbelievable portrayal of what living with autism really is. I agree with Darla 100%. But it's also part of the magic of the film is that it is a reflection of us, of me, of every single human being. I mean, if you don't identify with these individuals, forget the autism. Mm-hmm. As human beings, their anxieties, their struggles, their confusion, their passion, their fear. I don't want to be involved, but I do want to be involved. I mean, I can never get over the fact that Meredith in the film, 3 hours before the formal, was, I want to stay in my room. I don't want to go. I want to be on my computer. And 3 hours later, she yells in the middle of a dance on the dance floor, I'm having the time of my life. How many of us have missed out on a time of our life because we were overcome with fear or insecurity? Mm-hmm. And how many of us went forward in spite of that fear and had a resounding success. So it's about us as human beings. I don't know how Alexandra and Barry did it, but they did it. They did it. It's a mirror of pure humanity.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah. And that whole, there's a sense of extremes going on, but then it's sometimes the extreme defines that so much more clearly than a lot of ambiguity.
Truth, right?
Right.
It's the most truthful expression.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
They're saying the things that we're all feeling, but we have all felt those exact same feelings at different points in our lives.
Right. I love that scene when, it sounds so funny to talk about a scene that I'm in, but when Jessica and I were talking about her dilemma, what am I going to do? I have both of these two guys hanging, you know, waiting for my reply. And I had to, as gently yet therapeutically as I could, to let her know Tommy was not an option anymore, Jessica, you know? I mean, that's just hilarious, but that's like my everyday life.
Yeah.
But how many of us have had trouble letting go of something that's really no longer a possibility?
Yeah.
Like
everyone.
That ship has sailed, you know, and yet we're still trying to buy a ticket for that for that ship. You know?
No, we could do this. We could torture the listeners. I'd like, oh, my favorite part. And I love this part.
Right,
I could go on and on and on. My guest, Alexandra Shiva, she's the producer and director of How to Dance in Ohio. It's a new documentary film now on HBO. And also with us, Dr. Emilio Amigo. He's one of the stars of the program. He's the psychologist who conceived the formal dance as therapy for a group of his patients at Amigo Family Counseling right here in the greater Columbus area. This we'll be right back. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. We're talking about young adults on the autism spectrum and the social skills they learn in preparing for their first formal dance. Their stories were captured in a new documentary on HBO. It's entitled How to Dance in Ohio. The film mostly focuses on three young women on the autism spectrum and their families as they prepare not only for the big spring formal, but also adulthood and independent living. In How to Dance in Ohio, Jessica talks about why she loves the Japanese style of animation known as anime.
I have an obsession with anime. I guess you could say I have anime crushes, which is very normal for people on the spectrum. I've always been there since I was a little girl. I dream in cartoons. I feel like I'm a little bit of a cartoon. Plus, cartoons never judge you like people do. Yeah.
Still with us is Columbus-based psychologist for Amigo Family Counseling, Dr. Emilio Amigo. Also with us by phone is the director and producer of the new documentary, How to Dance in Ohio, Alexandra Shiva. And joining us now in the studio are two people who were featured in the film, Caroline McKenzie. She's a client at Amigo Family Counseling. Welcome to the show, Caroline.
Thank you for having me on here.
And her mom, Johanna McKenzie. Welcome to the show, Johanna.
Hi, Ann. Thank you for having us.
Caroline, one of my favorite I told people I'm going to be doing the one of my favorite scenes routine. But one of my favorite scenes was when you went to pick out your dresses at David's Bridal.
Yes.
And another aspect of this whole thing was how familiar everything looked, because we live here in Ohio and live in Central Ohio, and that was kind of a cool thing. But tell us about that experience of going and picking out a dress and what you went through.
Well, I had been there once before. For a bridesmaid dress from my cousin Allison. So going back was really exciting. And
because you knew what you were to expect.
Yes.
Yeah.
And, well, afterwards, when I got into a certain show, it felt like it was like an episode of Say Yes to the Dress. So picking out a dress was a similar experience.
Yeah.
It was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
To pick out what dress I wanted, what I was really looking for.
Yeah.
And it was just a lot of fun with my friend Jessica.
Yeah. Yeah. Johanna, what fun for you as the mother of the daughter that's going to the formal?
Well, it was wonderful. We had the whole store to ourselves. And just watching the girls have fun together and do what typical teenagers do, getting ready for a dance, it was just what every kid wants, what every girl wants when they're going. They want to feel special. You want to feel beautiful. And I think they accomplished that and had fun. And that was the whole point.
Yeah, yeah. Alexandra, what a great scene.
That scene was originally 9 minutes long. I just want to tell you, 9 minutes. We whittled it down. I think it's 2.5 minutes now. But when we first cut it, it was 9 minutes. We couldn't let go.
Right.
We couldn't let go. Yeah, it was incredible. It was an incredible thing to capture, and we were so excited that David's Bridal let us film there. And my co-producer Barry and I were literally inside dress racks around the corner so that you wouldn't see us in the mirrors, because
uh-huh.
It's all mirrors. And our DP, Layla Kilborn, did an incredible job of almost never, ever showing up in the mirror. And so you really, I think, feel like you're in there with them and, you know, just experiencing this incredible thing with them. And when they're moms, too, it's a very mother-daughter, it's an incredible mother-daughter moment.
Mm-hmm.
In the film that I thought was really moving. There are many, actually, but that I really loved it.
Jamie in Columbus, you're on the air. Hi, Jamie.
Oh, good morning. Thank you.
You have a child who is in the documentary as well.
I do. Very proud of her, and I appreciate this so much. And just wanted to say, as a parent, I didn't know what to expect, but I now so appreciate a few things. Having a child with an autism spectrum disorder, we have felt many times that we live in a very isolated or insular way, and opening up such a special and meaningful world and having it be so well received was just very special for us.
I'm so glad.
How did you watch it? Did you watch it with friends? Did you just watch it alone? Did that matter?
You know, that's a good question, because I really had to give that some thought. I have a wonderful neighbor who wanted to have this huge premiere party and, you know, roll out the red carpet, and I just didn't know how they would feel once they saw it. Because there was a lot of just really heartbreaking moments. And there was a lot of joy, but I didn't know if they would necessarily get it. Mm-hmm. So really thought about it, and then I decided, no, yeah, we should have a party. And Natalie really wanted to have a party.
Mm-hmm.
And so we did. We had balloons, and we had cake, and she was our star. And I had a few people come over that were very close to us, and we, you know, sometimes cried, and we're sometimes confused, and sometimes we're just really joyful. And in the end, it was just perfect. So,
Jamie, thanks for your call.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Caroline, how did you feel watching the film?
Watching the film, it was unusual to see myself. And the way that I sounded back then, I just feel really embarrassed.
That's how I feel listening to myself 6 years ago when I first came on radio. Go ahead.
Well, I had a tendency to stammer like now, but now I think if James Earl Jones could control his stammering and make it big, maybe I can learn how to control it too. And before I was really into what I'm currently into, I had no interest in my speech therapies. But now I think it would be a real help since I really want to go into voiceover work now.
What did you learn from watching the film?
I learned that, well, let's see.
What surprised you, maybe, is another way to put it.
Well, what surprised me was really what the others were going through. I had no ideas of what Jessica had been going through in her work life. And seeing that scene with her, I admit this, but one of the times I watched it, it actually made me tear up to see her tear up like that.
A lot of empathy there. Johanna, what about you? What did you learn from the film that?
I just feel as though Alexandra made all of our children heard and seen, and people are ready to hear that. And it's been very touching and surprising how many people have approached us and thanked us for being a part of that film. So I learned that people really want to know. They don't. Even our families have been amazed at what our girls have gone through. So it just gives us a lot of hope for our children in the future.
An undercurrent throughout the film, Dr. Amigo, is the relationship, is young adult relationships and romance. It's there. How do you, we're entering a new age. We know more and we're better educated about all those issues. It was nicely tempered throughout the film, but what do you make of that and how do you deal with it?
I think it was eye-opening for a lot of us to maybe consider the possibility that I can have a special someone in my life. I can go to the dance with someone. It's okay to have those crushes, those emotional connections to somebody that kind of drive you crazy, but make you get up every morning. And so I think that was, again, a rite of passage. We all should have the right to have those experiences and to explore that and to learn more about ourselves and to just keep being more of a fully, you know, actualized human being. And if I could just share one thing, because I think it was a really important element to have my clients see the film. We had a special screening before the public saw the film at a local movie theater. And so everyone who was in the film was invited to participate with a family or a caregiver who's involved in our program. And that was powerful for the community of clients and family caregivers to see it together. It was a very intimate setting, very illuminating, inspiring, and very honoring of those individuals who were in the film so that they knew what the film was all about. And as Caroline said, one of the remarkable impressions was what an incredible group of people, of clients, that everyone was proud to be among this community. And that's powerful.
Caroline, one of the segments in the film was about you as a student at Columbus State. You're still going to school there, right?
I currently am still a student there.
Mm-hmm. You said you currently are, meaning?
Yes. I'm still attending classes. I still study and I hang out with my friends. And, I'm currently taking mythology this semester.
Okay.
And the professor is pretty fun.
And did you feel like there was what did you think about how the film depicted your life?
Well, how to answer that? I feel that there wasn't really much emphasis put put much on how my life normally goes. I feel that it's more focused on Meredith and Jessica than it is myself.
Interesting. Alexandra, I don't think that. I thought it was, I didn't measure the minutes either.
I think, I think if we ask Meredith and Jessica, they may say the opposite. So
exactly.
I do think that it's hard. I just think it's hard to watch yourself.
Yeah.
I find it impossible to watch myself.
I wasn't agreeing with you on that score, but yeah, it's always hard to listen to ourselves and to watch ourselves on film.
I will say though, I have had a number of clients say when the sequel comes out, they want to have a bigger role. So they have stood up and said, "Hey, I want to be highlighted." Okay, do you get that, Alexandra?
When the sequel goes out, but at least one of the clients was his face was blurred throughout. So some people just didn't want to participate, right?
You know, but there were probably, I would say, Dr. Mee, you'll correct me if I'm wrong, but maybe four people group that didn't want to be in the film. And so we blurred their faces because of the dance. There was no way to shoot around them. So we just blurred their faces.
Like they still wanted to be a part of the group process
and
to gain therapeutically and clinically. They just didn't want to have their face shown.
And was that an individual thing or was that a parental thing?
I would think both.
Okay.
Both. But a quick story about that. One of the Pixel people, when we had our private screening, stood up in tears and said to me first, actually, on the side, he said, "Do you think there's any way they could remove the pixels from my face? Because I would be proud for the world to know I'm part of this community and that I'm living with autism. Was there any way that they could change that?" Mm-hmm. And I said, "Ask Alexandra."
And that was amazing.
He did, and they said yes. So he was depixelized. I don't know how that works.
Between that time and when it went on to HBO.
Absolutely. So that, to me, that was inspiring.
Actually, we hadn't actually finished the what was going to Sundance. We were about to be done with the print that was going to Sundance. I mean, the DCP is the exhibition copy. And when he came over and said to me, "Can I talk to you about where I'm pixelated?" I got really nervous. I thought, "Oh no, he's going to say he's not pixelated enough, and you can still tell it's him, and he's quite tall, and he was pixelated 9 times through the dance." And we had worked really hard to make sure you really couldn't tell it was him. And I said, "Yes." And he said, "Could you undo it? Because I really want to be part of this." And so as soon as we got back into the post-production room where we were finishing the film, there was like another small error in something that they had to fix. And I was like, "And while you're at it, could you please take the pixels off of this gentleman?" So it actually went to Sundance with him in it.
How many times have you watched the film, Caroline?
Let's see.
About how many?
I'd like to say 5 times now.
And do you get something different out of it every time you watch it?
Well, I've seen it. Let's see. Seeing it 5 times, it really sort of lost its effect on me by this time.
Good point. I got to throw this in here with Caroline's statement about maybe, she wasn't highlighted as much as some of the other young ladies. It's a reminder in life that sometimes it's not how many scenes we're in, but the impact of those scenes. Mm-hmm. I mean, obviously, the How to Dance in Ohio HBO promotional piece is a picture of you, primarily. And some of those iconic moments in the film, the dancing, with Jay, the kiss that was just snuck in there. All of those are such beautiful moments that's how life is. It's not about how many times we're there, but what do we do when we're there?
Right, exactly.
And if I could say, I don't think Caroline meant she wasn't in it as much, but this is just her life. Yeah. It's normal. It's every day. Why are you filming me?
Yeah.
Well, Johanna McKenzie, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
Johanna McKenzie, she's Caroline's mother. And Caroline McKenzie, thanks to you as well.
Thank you very much for having me on here.
And Dr. Emilio Amigo, thanks to you as well.
Thanks, Anne.
And also Alexandra Shiva by phone, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
Alexandra Shiva, she's the producer and director of How to Dance in Ohio. Everybody else was in the film as well. Thanks for listening. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.